Pump up the volume on your parenting with Parent Pump Radio. Get motivated, get inspired, and get informed with how to parent in the new millennium. Your hosts for the show and Parent Coach Super Guides are Gretchen Downey and Jacqueline T.D. Quinn.
Hi, this is Gretchen.
Hi, this is Jacqueline T.D. Quinn. I'm so excited for our new guest today. He is the founder of Initia Education, which provides academic success coaching and high performance test prep, including the SAT, the ACT, to really bright students struggling with challenges like time management, special needs such as ADD and ADHD. He and his team guides your students by teaching them proven systems that empower them to achieve lifelong habits of success. They work with the students both online and in person in the greater Los Angeles area. He is proud to have helped his students gain admission and scholarships to colleges such as Stanford, UC Berkeley, and Boston College. He's also an award-winning film producer who's created educational documentaries and online series and teaches production to emerging filmmakers. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome Victor Solis.
Thank you very much, Jackie.
You're welcome.
Hello, thanks for having me here. I appreciate it.
Well, Victor, we are thrilled you're here to be talking about this very hot topic that causes kids and parents too so much stress, anxiety, and pain sometimes, and even a lot of time and effort, you know, and this includes schools and universities, but most importantly, this impacts the students. So what we want to spend some time with on today's show is giving people clarity about some of the controversial issues and subjects, you know, surrounding the subject and how to acquire perhaps a broader and healthier perspective when it comes to test taking and standardized tests. And Victor, what I've observed having teenagers and working with a lot of teens is that so many people are caught up in the fear and the frenzy of testing. I've got to get my kid good tests. They've got to study harder for a subject they're not good at to get really good at it. And they feel like they need to train their kids to be better test takers. And so in the process, we seem to throw out good judgment and reasoning, and oftentimes our own personal power and authority to question why am I doing this? Or is this good for my kid and healthy for our young people to put them through such a thing? So I think the number one question to start out with, how important are these standardized tests? Really, what do they mean for the universities? Okay. And then what's the meaning or the value in terms of, do they really measure the intelligence or the capacity of the human being? And in this case, it's the students.
Right. I really love those questions, Gretchen, since those are the exact questions that I address whenever I speak with a family, parents, and a student for the first time. It's starting off with any misconceptions and myths out there about, I heard that the SAT is harder in June. I heard that the ACT has more science. I heard this and that. So it might help your audience to give a quick primer about, you know, what are the tests looking like today? They've changed quite a bit over the last several years, and especially in 2015. So to answer your first point of what do these tests really measure, what I tell all students, I actually pose it in the manner of a question. I say, so tell me, do you think that your SAT score has something to do with your intelligence? Does it have something to do with your IQ? And really, if we were looking up research on this, we would ask the question, is there any correlation between a high school student's standardized test scores and your intellectual capacity, as you said, or more importantly, is there a correlation between these test scores and the fact that you'll be able to graduate within 4 years, or if you're even going to succeed in your freshman year? And the answer is there's no correlation. We've seen research in the educational space for many years. Then this brings up the second question, why are these tests so important? And why is there such an enormous multi-billion-dollar industry over test prep and all of the books and the resources that are really proffered to parents and students? And we find that it's an incomplete and an imperfect system. where the universities require some kind of measuring stick. So, for example, here in California, we have the UC system, University of California, UCLA, UC Berkeley, UC Irvine, and all of those campuses. So we've known for many years that since this UC system, and we might have this kind of parallel in, say, Texas with the UT system and the other state schools, is that they're intended to open the doors to as many local students as possible, or so the mission goes. We've seen the increase in international student applicants and the increase in out-of-state applicants because simply it comes down to the numbers game. It's a lot of money that these universities are taking in when they can say yes to students from abroad and students from out of state. Well, what happens is that we have so many applicants that this imperfect system needs to use a measuring stick called the SAT or ACT. They're going to use that score and they're going to put that into their formula. Even though a lot of people think that it seems to be very mechanical, you know, here's Johnny, he's got his GPA, he submits his transcript and his test scores and his other application materials, the sports he's in and so forth. And some people think that it's just run through a computer and it spits out a yes or a no. But actually, with a lot of state schools, you have a human element. There is a round table of admissions officers, and they're looking at all of this information. So then this brings up the next thing for parents and students to think about is, what kind of score are you applying to? And do they weigh the SAT and ACT's GPA, less than GPA? They might not even weigh it at all, especially with about 1,000 universities across the nation now that are test optional, that say, we're more interested in who you are as a person. And if you do submit these scores, that's nice. We'll take a look at that. But that does not have as much weight as your personal statement. You know, who are you? What are challenges that you've overcome? Did you come from an immigrant family? Have you had some tremendous losses or some real big challenges that you had to overcome? Have you played sports? You know, are you an artist? Let's look at the full, you know, spherical human being who is applying, as opposed to whittling down a student to only two numbers. What's your GPA and what's your SAT or ACT score? So I hope that gives you a primer on the big picture that every university is a little bit different. And the amount that they weigh your SAT or ACT score could vary tremendously on the university.
And that's interesting, Victor, because you point out something very important, that they're looking at these other aspects of the human being, these other contributing aspects, yet in the process, so much effort is spent in the testing aspect. It's like the ratio is extremely off. It's like 5% over here focusing on you as a human being, and then 95% is, let's test the heck out of these kids, so that when, for example, my kid's going into writing the essays about themselves, they don't know exactly what to say, and they're not sure what to include because the language in the schools and the language around everything that they do isn't about who they are as a human being. It is about your score. And not entirely and not always, but how do you correct a system like that? I mean, what do you do?
Yeah, right. What can you control as a student, as parents? Especially on one end, you have the students who are really driven and I'm aiming for the top, and this is what I've seen on their freshman profile. You know, a freshman profile, I usually put that in caps. This is a tool that we can use. Let's give ourselves information and give ourselves some more options. So that way you can go forth and think about, okay, so are they looking for this kind of essay? Or are they looking for that kind of essay? We cannot necessarily do a lot about how, say, the UC system is going to look at the child's application. But what we can do is learn the rules of the game, and then we can play the game even better. And one of those things for the personal statements are some great books out there. I've shared a lot of my prior students' writings with a lot of my clients to show them, here's the rough draft of a student who is applying to, say, USC here in Southern California, you know, very competitive private school. And here is the final draft. And let's see what is really turning on these admissions officers. And the one word that I use is narrative. You are crafting your own narrative. You are the hero in your own story. You know, are you telling a story of the big adversity that you climbed over and you crawled up that mountain until you finally got to the peak? Or perhaps your story is a mystery. You're trying to figure out, I think I learned differently and I'm having a hard time in school. And then I learned that I had something called ADD. What is this? What do I do? What does that mean about me? That's a different kind of narrative for some students. And other students might be telling the narrative of how they learned so much by being involved as a figure skater and coaching young figure skaters. All of these are stories. So I really encourage students to think as a storyteller. Like, who are you and what was that challenge? What was this unique circumstance that only you had? And let's really bring that to light and tell me this story. Tell me as if we're just sitting at the table. And make that your guiding light for the approach to personal statements, which is far different than what you hear in an English class, which is more about a thesis statement, an intro paragraph, you're quoting evidence. This is a totally different way of writing. And I find that once students are thinking about, oh, hero in a story, yeah, this is the hero's journey. You're on a quest towards something bigger. And I usually see that then students start to light up and they start to bring forth those unique aspects of their own personal life.
I love exactly what you're saying. You're bringing forth aspects of their own personal life, which means you're bringing forth aspects of themselves, the true essence of who they are, and putting it down into something meaningful. How, Victor, do you handle, because I would imagine you have a lot of this, handle the stress and changing that right brain activity over into something creative and at the same time managing those emotions and behaviors? Because that's what I observe the most with kids is it's the emotional regulation, the stress, the anxiety around this. And they're getting it pumped at them from multiple directions. I mean, I've walked in to some of these businesses where they have provide coaching and testing services to get your child ready. The second we walked in the door, they just made my kids and me feel like, we had the fear of, I don't know what, we're going to do horrible. He's going to fail. I mean, he's so far behind the mark. And I imagine there's a lot of parents that get caught up in that. And I know you take a different approach. So tell us about that approach and how do you handle those emotions?
That is a huge piece. And I really hope that parents face that rather than saying, well, you know, we'll sort it out and you're going to apply and you're going to go on the engineering track and this is what you will do. I turn that around. And one of the very first things we start talking about when we're doing a consultation is, well, what do you find interesting? I don't ask, and this is something that parents can think about, especially as they're looking for a tutor, a coach, a test prep kind of program that's going to be a good fit. You know, that one approach of you are behind and there's so much competition out there. We know from research that when a student looks at competition as some large, large set of competitive applicants, like if we look at a group of students and we say, you're going to sit down to take this test called the SAT. And remember, there's a million other students across the nation that are going to be taking it too. Forget it. You know, you start to tap into the amygdala. Fear comes in. Oh my goodness, what am I facing? So to prevent that route in our minds from taking over, we don't want to think about all that competition. I want to think about who are you as a person. So tell me, Matthew, what do you find interesting? I don't ask, what do you want to major in? Or where do you want to go to school? Or what do you want to do when you grow up? Those questions for a 17 or 18-year-old, they're brand new. You've never gone to college before. How can I expect you to know exactly which university you want to go to? You've never majored in something before. So how can I ask you that question and really have a productive conversation? Instead, what lights you up? You know, what do you find inspiring? Did you have a teacher in a certain class that really lit you up about learning? Because if you can continue to be excited about learning, you're going to explore, you're going to discover. whether that be discovering something in science, you know, asking great questions, being curious. That's exactly what the scientific method is. Or you might go into the social sciences, or you might go into the arts. Now, whatever that is, let's be excited about this, because I want to instill a sense of ownership into that student. You are owning this process. You are going to be living at that home away from home. You're going to be investing a lot of energy with study buddies, with professors. You're going into a whole new community. So can we help you to think as positively as possible and really start to kindle that interest in learning? And that starts to take us away from the focus on the numbers, or the focus on the GPA, or the focus on these objective pieces that are certainly important, and we'll get to those. But I first want to see that this student is looking forward to going into college and having a great experience.
So once we can lower some of this test anxiety, because a lot of it's, like you said, is the stress, they still have to take it. So what are some of the things that as parents, I mean, I'm not there yet. My kids are in junior high and elementary, but it's coming. So this is great input and suggestions that you're giving us to help our children relieve that stress and kind of look forward to taking the test. So then how can we prepare them for this test? Because it's a standardized test, like you said. What are things that we can do to help them prepare for that big day?
I like what you were asking, Jackie, and especially with the context of you have younger kids that are not thinking at all about the SAT or ACT. So it's true, you can begin earlier, and that starts when we start talking about what's the test. You know, you have a test in fifth grade, you have a test in seventh grade. So how are you approaching this? Okay, what do you already know? And do you have a plan? What do you think you should study? Well, let's see. I think I should make some flashcards. Okay, has that worked well for you before? Well, not really. All right, well, what do you think you can do this time? And notice that I've just jumped into this Socratic method of asking the student, what works for you? All right, if that doesn't work, how can we adjust? How about this? Have you ever tried Quizlet? Have you ever tried writing it down on one long column on the left side and then writing down your own sentence on the right side? I'm not imposing my systems to say this is the only thing that works. Instead, we have this conversation about, well, what do you find that works well for you? Okay, great. Now, how much time do you need? Well, I think I should study until 7 o'clock. All right. And then you think you want to take a break and, you know, we can review again. And now it's being made into a process that ideally the child is enjoying. The child is going through the process. You're being in the present rather than the focus on, I need to get a 93 or I need to pass. I need to. Well, that's something off in the future, especially if we're defining anxiety as this frenzy and this focus on something that is not even here yet. You know, we're focused on this urgency of something to come in the future, as opposed to how can we be more mindful about what we're doing right now. And when students start to get this language of like, oh, I'm just not a good test taker, I'm not a math person, I often counter by saying, did you know there's actually no such thing as a bad test taker? But what we do have is trained test takers and untrained test takers. There's no such thing as a bad soccer player. You could be a trained soccer player or an untrained soccer player. Let's give you the training so that you can become better.
So, Victor, in this whole process, we're looking at this system that is somewhat flawed in a way. And I love what you're doing in terms of helping people to cope and gain a broader perspective on this. You mentioned earlier about competition, you know, and how it fires up the amygdala, which it does, and these anxiety and stressful points and trying to alleviate that and looking at it a different way or easing their pain and their anxiousness around it. But the bottom line is, at the end of the day, they're still walking into lots of testing. And there's fabulous people like you out there that are making it more palatable, have a broader understanding so that they can get through it better and honestly and healthier, because we know this is having physiological effects on our kids. I mean, actual physical effects. It's almost like, are we enabling a system to continue? And is there a better system? I mean, if you were working for universities, what system would you develop?
Right. So we're going to jump into the sandbox and try out some ideas here. And what we have seen that a lot of universities are trying out. And here, for our audience too, I use university and college interchangeably, but we do know that whether it's the two-year school and then you're going to transfer, whatever your route may be, is looking at the schools which have become test optional. Why did they choose that? They have a sense that we are going to spend more time, just like the analogy of a teacher. How can a teacher truly gauge and measure the ability of a student? Well, there's the fast way, the convenient way. Let me give you the multiple choice, bubble it in, run it through the scanner, and it pumps out a number. I mean, that's expedient. And we have teachers who are overloaded. So it's certainly an option. It's a legitimate form of making a test. But is that measuring the student's ability in the same way as asking the student to write, asking the student to compose an essay? And that's what the analogy is for these colleges that have said, if you take that big test, that big SAT, that's fine. It's multiple choice. It has an optional essay. We'll look at that. But instead, what if we say we're interested in finding really unique individuals who are excited to learn and want to become a part of our community? And if I ask that question instead, then as the admissions officer in our sandbox, as we're coming up with this new system, I would say, well, tell me about yourself and let me compose some prompts for you, as we've seen in the Common App for colleges, as we've also seen in the UC personal statements. Tell me about the world that you come from. Tell me about something that you overcame and what did you learn from that? I want you to tell me about a leadership role that you've had, and did you have some kind of lasting effect on your school or on your community? With arts programs, we know that students pursuing theater, drama, film, television, they often, in their portfolios, they often will videotape their auditions and send that across the states to a place like New York. So that kind of information, even seeing how the student is composed and poised when they're speaking in a kind of video, as they present that to admissions officers, tells me a tremendous amount more than just that number of the test. So I would go further away from these multiple choice tests and instead ask these students, tell me, write us, show me what you can compose, show me what it's like for you to really take ownership of this process and to find that story within you, to go through the process of drafts, to have your uncle's feedback, your friend's feedback, and push yourself, challenge yourself to give me the best writing sample possible. And it doesn't matter if you're going to be an English major or if you're going to be a chemical engineering major. We know that writing is what you'll be doing in any major. And writing and reading are still the cornerstones of any field of study, especially if you want to succeed. So I would really push students to challenge themselves and to invest more energy in showing me who you are by that essay or by that video essay rather than the numerical test scores.
In that process too, it makes the student reflect upon themselves.
And they have to think.
And because they're spending the time doing something anyway, whether it's the multiple choice and the practicing for all that, isn't that more productive? I mean, I certainly think it is more productive to have them really think about themselves in a deeper, more meaningful way. And at the same time, that does not activate an amygdala. It doesn't. It activates a reflective
right.
mind. And that's an integrated mind when you do that. And these are principles of positive psychology. And so that actually elicits positive emotional responses, less competition and more cooperation about how they're working with themselves, their community, having perspective on that and really looking at it and analyzing it. And ultimately, they can put something down on a paper that probably hopefully won't take them as much time as had they studied for a couple years practicing test taking.
Well, and also also I see it as something that they can write down what they can do. Like you said, what have you done in the leadership role? So then you're thinking, what have I accomplished? Whereas these tests just makes you feel like, what can I not memorize? Why can I memorize this? Why is this making so hard? You know, all the things they can't do. My question is, what does this test measure then, really? Because we've been doing this for decades, and it's still going on, like you said, Victor. So what is it really measuring? Because obviously somebody out there is thinking it's important.
Right. And thanks for bringing this back full circle. Just as Gretchen, you had asked earlier, that when I ask students, do you think this measures intelligence? And that could be a whole discussion in itself. Well, what is intelligence? And how do we measure that? You know, are we following the hypothesis that we have multiple intelligences? You have a kinesthetic intelligence as an athlete, as a dancer, as an actor. Or do you have emotional intelligence? Are you going to become a fantastic person in the social sciences? And we certainly need people who have great empathy and can go into fields like social work and those allied areas. When the students say, well, I don't know, maybe, yes, IQ, because I got a 650 on reading, does that mean I am ready for university level? Having a high SAT score means you do well at the SAT. Having a high ACT score means you studied and you do well at the ACT. There is no correlation between how you do on those tests and how you do as a freshman. Because we also know that in most college classes, you're not taking multiple choice tests that are going from one type of question to another. A lot of college tests are written essays in class. You have to do your research in advance. That's not the same kind of test that we see. So then you ask the question, well, what is this preparing me for? The bigger thing that you learn by preparing for the SAT or ACT and this whole process of all of these tests in high school is that you're learning how to learn. You're learning what it takes to construct a schedule, how you manage your time. How are you going to study this week because you got that volleyball tournament? How are you going to study next week because we have Thanksgiving? How are you going to prepare with a friend? Are you going to learn some collaboration techniques? What do you need to do to improve your vocabulary? Are you reading? Are you hearing from your academic coach that, hey, you know what? The only thing that it takes to improve your reading is reading. So are you now stepping up to read, just like mom and dad said, read 15 minutes a day. But what are you reading? Okay, you're starting with Sports Illustrated. Great. You're reading something. Can I invite you to check out this Economist article or this Atlantic Monthly article about this sports figure? Now, let's start to expand a little bit. And that's the bigger thing that I see students learning is how am I going to create a schedule that I can manage and how am I prioritizing? And that's much bigger than learning any number of crazy vocab words that you may not even use. You may not even run into these.
Wow.
And yeah. So fortunately, we've seen the tests been modified over the last couple of years, and we're seeing less of those really rare vocab words. We still see geometry, algebra, problem solving, you know, statistics. So that's still happening, but we can take a bigger perspective on saying, I'm going to learn how to learn and then go from there.
Okay.
That's awesome, Victor.
Oh my God.
Thank you so much.
I think we're going to have Victor back.
Absolutely.
Because we are actually out of time. Thank you, Victor. So, Victor, tell us where we can get more information about you.
Our site is initiaeducation.com. Initia, like to start, to initiate, INITIA, education. We're also on Facebook. I'm also on Twitter. And wherever you are, I'm going to be looking forward to hearing from you and answering any questions that you have.
And he'll also be in the show notes. So please look at your show note and we'll have his information there. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you so much for joining us today on Parent Pump Radio. You can go to parentpumpradio.com and click on the pink box on the top of our homepage to listen to our new and archived shows, which are featured on missionsradio.org. That's missions with an S, radio.org. And once you're there, subscribe to our news feed to be notified of new releases. And for those of you that don't know, the RSS feed button is right next to the follow and share buttons on the top of this page that you're on, the one that features our shows. And that's the button you want to click to be notified of any new episodes. Also, you can visit us at our website, www.parentpumpradio, to leave your comments, questions, and topic suggestions, and to connect with us on social media. When you sign up on our website, we have a free gift for you, so don't miss out. So until next time, have a wonderful week.